So to set a little context, this is a short clip from an episode of Exceptional Parents, Extraordinary Challenges podcast, which I describe the events leading up to and after my 23-year-old daughter gave birth to a son that we were all well aware she was really unequipped to care for in any way, and we're just kind of seeing what happened next. What you're going to hear is what happened next. She gave birth, it was early September of 24, and it was on a Wednesday, and the clip begins with the following day we go to visit her, and then Friday she brings the baby home to her mother's. She was going home on Friday night. She had the baby circumcised, and Saturday they took him in for vaccinations. So he had a rough go of it. That's it. Just deciding you want to come down and incarnate into this world, and just poking and prodding and cutting you. That's gotta be a headache.
Yep.
And she
Friday night she's at her mom's, Saturday all day. Sunday morning, you get the call.
Sunday morning, I get up and I'm walking the dogs. This is my want. And I look down and there's a text. I can't do this. And I called her. And my first thought is, I don't know if this is acute or chronic. And from what I understand, almost every mom at some point thinks the hell with this.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And it's within that first 48 hours. Yes.
And then when I
get me out of here.
Yeah.
And when I heard her, she was at her wit's end. She had the baby in a crib. Cried all night, screamed all night, kept him up all night. She was just completely frazzled. And
her mother was frazzled.
And I'm just listening to this and I'm thinking, okay, I'm a novice at this. Okay. Mm-hmm. I want to bring in the pros from Dover. I came home and I had Julie listen to see what the diagnosis was. And both of us came out saying, we got to go get that kid. We independently going into ourselves in a deep place knew. And surprisingly enough, I was prepared for some kind of battle with her mom or some kind of resistance. And we got in the car and it's about a...
But yeah. Abby wanted you to come get it. But that's the other thing we have to say. We didn't just say, we're going to swoop in. She right. said that I need you to come get him.
Hmm.
And that's when it was so clear to me. Yeah, we got to go get him. It was really clear.
And that's my formal marital abode. And I think it's the first time I've been in there in a decade. What was tragic to me, tragic's the right word, is how the whole house was made to be a place for a baby. There was just gifts and quilts and hangings and the crib and this whole dream that they had set up.
And a room for the baby. Like, he already had his own room with a full crib and baby clothes, months and months worth of diapers.
Gifts, shower gifts, things that people had made for her, quilts. It's just, you'd be walking in there and you could feel the dreams that we're not going to.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think of it at the time, but in retrospect, how lucky we are that we stayed in the unknowing and didn't dream any dream.
Yeah, those expectations, because you've talked about it a little bit, but when you set expectations, you're going to be disappointed. And there's the grief that Abby's mother is or will or has experienced, is I'm sure grief that some of our listeners can connect with, because she set those expectations, because she had those dreams that things would be different this time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we just, in the right rhythm of things, without rushing, we took the car seat that Abby's mother had, and there's a volunteer fire station just like a mile from the house. So Julie took the car seat to the fire station to make sure we had it. It was convenient as hell.
Oh, yeah. You need a degree to do that.
Yes.
So that was elegant. And then we put Rowan in, and I sat in the back with my grandson, and Julie drove, and we came home. So what was that like, coming home or being home, or what do you remember?
I remember nothing specific about that first day. Mm-hmm. But I went into mother mode, but also a little bit of healer mode. Like, mm-hmm. This child has been traumatized. The last 36 hours have been really difficult. A circumcision, that's difficult. All those vaccines, that's difficult. So we've just got to calm his nervous system. We just got to calm. He's got to be held and carried and skin to skin. And everything is about him. Like right now, everything is about him. And I got to give a shout out to my own kids. They had no notice. None of us had any notice. Told them in the morning after we made this decision. I'm like, Dave and I are leaving. We're going to get the baby. We're bringing him back. He's going to stay with us. I need you guys to do this and this for me while we're gone. We have three dogs and three cats. Like, let's get all the hair. They're all over the floor for this little new baby. Let's have him breathing as clean of air as possible. Like, just clean the house. And while we were gone, they just cleaned and cleaned. No complaints. No, I don't want to do this. They just did it. And it took a whole team. It took a family. Rowan was with us for 13 days, and it was absolutely a family undertaking. It wasn't just me. It wasn't just Dave. It was Dave and me and my daughter and my son. And everybody pitched in. And we gave him as peaceful of an environment as we could. He was in arms 24 hours a day. He was in somebody's arms. He was never put down. I raised my own kids that way. There was no idea that we would do it any other way. One of the things I remember is that not long after we got home, I put him in the front wrap and we went out and walked the dogs with him down the street. And there he was, just heart to heart, chest to chest, just outside walking. And he fussed a little, but so quickly he settled. You could feel him he just went from agitation to just little by little, he was settling. By that evening, he just never cried. You know, he just settled very quickly, so that for the next 13 days, he barely made a peep. He would peep to let us know I'm hungry. Mm-hmm. You know, he never had to full on cry. He never had to scream. It was
right. And what we knew, and we knew because we knew it because it was just so obvious in the moment. We were feeding his soul. Mm-hmm. We were feeding all the comfort, the security, the love, the propinquity, everything that he needed. And that's all that was ours to do. And of course, I'm lucky because I got the pro from Dover over here, who just that's the greatest mom. And I'm not saying it because she's here. She's just a phenomenal mom. I've been humbled about what it can mean to be a parent by that. And so I knew that she knew exactly what to do. And so one, you could just tell we were giving that child what it wanted. And I wasn't worried that I would be if I brought that home myself and said, what do you do now?
Yeah.
Just hose them off. It was obvious. So that was beautiful to just know that we were just responding. I had someone who knew what needed to be done. And for me, it was beautiful to see my wife just with an infant again, a newborn. Mm-hmm.
So we leave it here with us having my beautiful grandson at home in the arms of my wife and the arms of all of our family, and the events that transpired afterwards and how we were grandparents for 13 days. And there's so much in this that's, you've just heard a little bit of it, that's, as I say, it's raw, it's unfiltered, it's vulnerable, it's spontaneous, it's absolutely beautiful, it's somewhat heartbreaking. You can listen and decide for yourself. But one of the main reasons I wanted to share it with my cohort of attorneys, some I know, many I don't, is that it leads to lessons not just about life, but about life as a lawyer. Because so much of what we do is try to control, we want to control as many variables as possible. And what this situation with my grandson revealed is we couldn't control, we could only love. And that turned out to be the perfect recipe, the perfect approach. And I am inviting all of us to consider how much of that can we actually apply to our lives, including our lives as lawyers, that we can love more and control less. If you're interested and curious to pursue this a little bit more, again, you can reach me at dave@davegold.com, whether you want to do some formal coaching or just have a conversation. These are the conversations that I love to have.